Radio Prague News.
Police have interrogated the victim of a highly publicized hit-and-run accident involving the influential lobbyist Roman Janosik. Following the walkout of its senior member Carolina Peak, former junior coalition partner Public Affairs is set to elect a new leader at a party conference on Saturday, and the vast majority of Czechs are deeply unhappy with their country's political status quo, a fresh poll suggests. Police have interrogated the 51-year-old woman who became the victim of a hit-and-run accident involving the notorious Prague lobbyist Roman Janosik. According to the woman's lawyer, Wednesday's interrogation lasted roughly 1 hour. The testimony of the Vietnamese-born woman, who was treated at hospital for weeks following the accident, confirmed details of the police investigation and appeared truthful, her lawyer added. In late April, the hit-and-run accident made headlines. Days before it occurred, wiretaps of conversations between entrepreneur Roman Janosik and former Prague mayor Pavel Bem, over whom he is said to have had considerable influence, became public. Former junior coalition partner Public Affairs will be electing its new leader at a conference in Hradec-Králové on the weekend. Following the walkout of Deputy Prime Minister Carolina Peak and several other MPs, the party is making an effort to regroup and consolidate. Its current leader, Radek Jon, told press on Thursday that if a candidate with the necessary strength and the ability to unite the party can be found, he would prefer to not run for the post. He added that there are 2 to 3 candidates who he considers capable, but refused to specify who they were. Some 90% of Czechs are deeply unhappy with the current political situation in their country, according to a fresh poll released by the STEM agency. Only 1% of those polled said that they were satisfied with the country's status quo. When asked how they rate the future development of the nation, more than half of the respondents replied with "very bad," while only 8% said they believed the country would be going in the right direction. The result is the worst in 17 years, STEM agency staff said. A cold front brings thunderstorms, hail and strong winds to the Czech Republic on Friday night ahead of the feast days of the Ice Saints. The Czech Hydrometeorological Institute issued a warning for the time span between 6 p.m. on Friday and 4 a.m. on Saturday. The cold front also brings a drop in temperatures to about 15 degrees Celsius. Cooler conditions are expected to last into the next week. And now let's take a brief look at the immediate weather forecast. The next few days will see a drop in temperatures to about 15 degrees Celsius with heavy storms and hail in places. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this brings us to the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, Bikes for Africa attracts hundreds of donors in just 4 months. After that, Israeli author Tom Segiev about his biography of the Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal.
One of the discoveries of the book is that Wiesenthal had actually worked with the Mossad for 10 years, meaning that the Mossad had given him, had financed his activities for about 10 years.
I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that here on Radio Prague. Organizers in the Czech Republic have launched a project similar to Great Britain's Jolly Riders Foundation, whereby anyone can donate an old bicycle to a child in Africa. Although in operation only briefly, Kola Pro Afriku, or Bikes for Africa, has already taken off and is attracting broad interest. Earlier, Jan Wellinger spoke to the head of Kola Pro Afriku, Roman Posolda.
The main idea of our project is to send bicycles, used bicycles, to children to Africa, to Gambia, and to support children to access their school. Because at the moment, the children, they walk sometimes 5 to 10 kilometers every day. And some of the children, they just can't reach the school because it's too far. Just imagine they have 2 hours walk to school, 2 hours walking back. That's really tough. So to support them, to give them bicycles to be movable. And once they have education, they can decide a bit better for their life.
And how long has the project in the Czech Republic been running, and how would you gauge the public response here so far?
We are a very young organization. So we run the project for 4 months, and the response is just great. I couldn't imagine anything like that before we started. We are so pleased to do that mission, and we are so pleased, so touched by the public in Czech Republic, because at the moment we have 30 places around the country who joined us, and they collect bicycles, given bicycles from public, like collecting points or meeting points for people who wants to give the bicycle. And we have roughly 800 bicycles given, and that's only 4 months. I can say we haven't started yet. We just spread out the message a little bit through the media, and as I said, the response is just beautiful.
Now, because a lot of the bikes are older, they also need to be serviced before they are sent. How is that aspect of the project being handled?
The meeting point, collecting point, is a first stage. And from there, the bicycles will be transported to the central storage. And there will be people, like unemployed people, people from the community payback, probation, and people who are coming from the jail. They were there for 5 to 10 years, and nobody wants them, nobody waiting for them. So those people, all of them, they will come to the main center storage, and they will help to fix the bicycles. And after that, the bicycles will be ready to be sent to Gambia. And there is another point, very important point. The help is not only to Africa, but the help is back to Czech Republic, to those people who will be active, like those groups, what I said, unemployed people and probation and people after coming, being in jail.
What is the target date for when you would like the first container to go over? And will somebody from your organization be there personally for the handing off of the bicycles?
I think it will be quite soon after the rainy season in Gambia will stop, which will be roughly September. September this year, I think, realistically, we will be ready to send the first container of the bicycles. And we would like to go there too and to spend roughly a month each year to help local people in Gambia what to do with the bicycles. We are aware we need to send also a bit of knowledge what to do with the bicycles when they will be broken or whether they break down. So we send the spare parts, we send the tools, and we join the group Jolly Riders from Britain to teach local teachers, local people, how to fix the bicycles. We would like to know, and we would like to be aware that the bicycles won't stay aside, unused or left aside. We just would like to let them go to day school.
That was Roman Posolda of Bikes for Africa talking there to Jan Wellinger. This is Radio Prague. The Israeli author Tom Segev is in Prague to launch the Czech translation of his acclaimed biography of the Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal. Entitled Simon Wiesenthal, The Life and Legends, Tom Segev's latest work offers a critical yet compassionate look at the complicated man who devoted his life to tracking down Nazi criminals. Jan Richter spoke to Tom Segev during his Prague visit and asked him how different the real Simon Wiesenthal was from the myths he himself helped create.
Wiesenthal was a man who lived between fiction and reality. But again and again, I was surprised to find how much of what he says is in fact true, how much of what he says does have a grain of truth. And so I concluded that he didn't really invent much. He dramatized some things. He needed the myth which he created for two reasons. A, he had a need to be famous and loved and to become a celebrity. He enjoyed being a celebrity, but that was not the major reason. He created around himself a myth of a man who controls a huge, powerful organization, so powerful, in fact, as the KGB, the CIA, and the Israeli Mossad taken together. And he did that because in reality he was a very lonely man who had three tiny rooms in Vienna, and he had no agents and he had no money. He used to cut old newspapers and go through old documents and old telephone books. That's the way he worked. But the myth helped him get access to people.
Well, one of the myths, or reality, again, has to do with the interception of Adolf Eichmann in Argentina. What was his role in it?
When Wiesenthal started to look for Nazi criminals immediately after his release from Mauthausen concentration camp in 1945, he had an obsession. He decided to locate Adolf Eichmann. That became the purpose of his life in those years. And he did locate Adolf Eichmann. In April of 1953, he sent a letter to the Israeli ambassador in Vienna and told him, I have just learned that Adolf Eichmann is living in Argentina. And Israel did nothing with that letter, with that information. At the end, it is today recognized officially by the Mossad in Israel that Wiesenthal did in fact help in the efforts to locate Eichmann, including very shortly before Eichmann was actually caught. Mossad agents came to Wiesenthal and asked him about it. And one of the discoveries of the book is that Wiesenthal had actually worked with the Mossad for 10 years, meaning that the Mossad had given him, had financed his activities for about 10 years. This is something which nobody knew before I found the correspondence between Wiesenthal and the Mossad people.
How did he find working with the communist countries, with Czechoslovakia and perhaps Poland and other countries where the war criminals also were and might have been?
Until 1967, he had good relations with communist countries, which is a little bit surprising because he was very anti-communist. But he cultivated good relations with the Soviet Union and with Czechoslovakia. He received some valuable information regarding the SS from Czechoslovakia. In 1967, this all changed because of the Six-Day War between Israel and its neighbors, and the communist countries became very anti-Israel, and Wiesenthal, who was very pro-Israeli, felt at home in Israel. He really had to take a decision, and that's when he became very anti-communist, and the communist countries regarded him as a major enemy. In the book, I have reports from the Polish Secret Service who came to try to infiltrate his operation in Vienna and spied on him.
And in the opening part of your book, you give a fascinating account of the procession he organized in Jerusalem with the glass coffin and the urns of the ashes of the Jewish people who were murdered by the Nazis. And you described the feelings that Israelis felt at the time about it. What was his impact? What did people think about him in Israel? What was his impact on the society?
Wiesenthal was able to remember the Holocaust and cultivate an attitude towards the Holocaust long before most Israelis were able to do that. Israel had a very difficult attitude to the Holocaust. Nobody knew how to live with the fact. Nobody knew how to live with the survivors. And so Wiesenthal kind of forced an official memorial service on Israel at a very early date. That's the funeral of the ashes, which he had collected in Austria and brought to Israel. So that's his significance. Wiesenthal had a very broad humanistic approach to the Holocaust. He never hesitated to compare the Holocaust to other genocides in Rwanda or in Cambodia or the Balkans or whatever. And that is something which many Israelis found offensive, and the Jewish establishment in America found offensive, because we had, and to a large extent still tend today to have a view that the Holocaust is a unique event, unlike anything else, and cannot be compared to any other genocide. And that's one of the reasons why Wiesenthal became so controversial.
Israeli historian Tom Segev there, ending that report by Jan Richter. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey.
Over the last 20 years, Czechs have embraced consumer culture in a big way, with a great number of shopping centres, both city centre and out of town, now dotted around the country. To discuss how the experience of shopping has been transformed and how range and price now compare to other countries, I met up with former Elle editor Jana Cíglerová at Prague's Palladium Shopping Centre, a short walk from Wenceslas Square.
The change has been significant. It's not only in the luxurious market, but also in the mass market. Now we basically have pretty much all the main brands that you would know from the rest of the world or from Britain, for example. The change is, it's pretty much global now.
And if we go back fully 20 years to when the revolution happened, were there many or any shopping centres here back in 1989?
See, that's even hard to imagine today, but there were only three big, not even shopping centres, only department stores, one department store. And there were only three of them where people would get most of their shoppings. Whereas now you have a shopping center pretty much everywhere, on definitely several shopping centers in each Prague quarter.
Czechs seem to have really embraced shopping and shopping culture. Why do you think it is it's gotten on so much here?
The abundance, you know, something now you can have that, before you couldn't. I remember the first times we went abroad, I think Austria was the first, or Germany was the first, were the first foreign countries. You just could not believe what all was in the stores. You could not believe that there was vegetables, and you could choose colors of your trousers or your sweaters. You know, here you in Czechoslovakia back then, you would always have only one kind of cloth, and everybody would have to wear it. It's something I cannot even explain you today, because for me it's hard to imagine that it was the case. So I think it's the idea that we can, you know, that you can choose, you can also afford it, which wasn't the case 10 years ago maybe. So the overall economic situation of everyday Czech people has increased, that's what I would say.
I remember somebody telling me with confidence that it was 1997 that Czech women started dressing well. I think they meant dressing like Westerners. When do you think that the Czechs kind of caught up with the West in this respect?
I don't think it was 97. I don't think we have even caught up with the rest of the West yet. I think maybe recently, 4 years back, 3 years back, the difference is not as significant, but still, I'm sitting in a cafe and I could tell you exactly who is Czech, who is a Czech woman and who's not a Czech woman. There's still something about us, and not only women, I think the situation with men is even worse, that is just not there yet.
And what are the things that differentiate, say, a Czech woman from a Western woman? I know, for example, in the early 90s, it was shoes that people used to differentiate between Czechs and foreigners.
It's not only shoes, even though shoes still stay one of the criteriums. It's also haircut, hair color. I mean, look at the woman sitting next to us. It's just, you would not see a Western woman with red hair and those kind of shades. It's just not it's just not tasteful. And the sizes of clothes. Okay. Men wear jackets or suits that are one size too big. And women were very much like to wear T-shirts that are two sizes too small. So you could see their bellies. Again, the woman sitting next to us, the T-shirt is copying her, what you call it, fat? Yeah. It's just not something that a Western woman would wear, unless it's a very low income position Western woman. But this is a majority woman. And it's also the cuts of the materials, which means the price of the clothes, but also the cuts of the trousers, mostly jeans. You can see that it's not well cut, you know, so that would be the main differences.
When you walk around the center of Prague today, you see a lot of the same chains that you would see, say, in, I don't know, Madrid or Copenhagen. Do you think in any way the Czechs have lost something by becoming so uniform in terms of the high street here?
See, I've lost a lot because I travel a lot and I would not shop here. And that's one of the things that many Czechs do of my generation or of my kind of sort of income people. So anytime I went abroad, I would buy something there that nobody had here. Whereas now I go to Vienna, I go to Paris, I go to London, and I have to go and look after the small shops that are not the big chains that I would have here on any Prague street.
So basically it's more work for you.
Yes, yes.
I remember in the mid-90s, it often seemed to me that some foreign chains were kind of dumping their previous year's collections here at a high price. Did that happen, and does it still happen?
That was a big problem, and I think one of the biggest problems were why Pařížská Street, which is the most luxurious street in Prague, where you have all the Louis Vuitton and Dior stores, has been struggling for some time because you would go to one of these stores and you would find the collections of the past season there. And you had the feeling, okay, so they're trying to trick me. They think I'm Eastern European or I'm from Prague, I'm from Czech Republic, so I don't know. And I would never go to that store again. And plus, it was way more expensive than in original stores in Paris or London. So what many people with that kind of income ended up doing was they went shopping abroad. It was just better to go shopping in Paris or London or Madrid because you had the guarantee that A, you could choose, you had much better choice, and B, you knew the collections were up to date.
Generally speaking, how would you say prices today compare between the Czech Republic and Western countries?
For some reason, I don't understand why, but it's still a little bit more expensive here than in New York or in London. And that is another reason why people who can afford that kind of luxury brands, they go abroad and they go shopping there. You buy things that nobody else has here, plus you have good price or better price than here. And it used to be more expensive than it is now. I think also the crown has gotten stronger, so that makes the other currencies a little more available for us.
What about service? What's the standard like now, and has it changed much over the last 20 years?
It's better now, that's for sure, but it's still nothing comparable to British stores, French stores. I don't know, because I don't speak French, so I don't understand them if they try to talk to me. But definitely, I just came back from New York, and there everybody kind of talks to you. They ask you about your day. They start a conversation with you. Whereas here, it's hard for them to even tell you hi sometimes. And when you are the one who says hi first, then okay, they can very unwillingly, reluctantly answer you hello. But that's it. That is a change in mind that still has to come for us.
That was Jana Cíglerová there talking to Ian Willoughby in that edition of Panorama, first broadcast in November of 2009. Now, topping off our show for today is the next edition of our language learning series, The ABCs of Czech.
Ahoy, and welcome back to Radio Prague's ABC of Czech. Today we are looking at Czech surnames. I'm Heather Bowne, and
Dita Asiedu
is in the studio as well. Today we're looking at names related to moving. The most common surname in the Czech Republic is
Novák,
which is closest to the English Newman. Over 8% of the names in the Prague phone book are
Novák.
Related to
Novák
is also
Novotný,
which is also a quite common Czech surname. There also exists
Nový
and
Nováček,
but these are not as common. Can you guess where these names come from?
Novák, Novotný, Nový,
and
Nováček.
The best clue is from the adjective
Nový,
meaning new.
Novák, Novotný, Nový,
and
Nováček
are surnames given to newcomers by inhabitants of a village or community. It makes sense, right? In fact, we hear the same thing in English sometimes too. Who's that? The new guy, and then it just sticks. Another surname given for a similar reason is
Procházka.
But this name was usually given to someone who walks or wanders. The name
Procházka
comes from the verb
Procházet,
to walk. The verb
Procházet
has many different meanings and usages in Czech. For example, to go by, to pass through, to traverse, to come through. The verb for returning in Czech is
Navrátit.
Can you think of a Czech surname that has the verb
Navrátit
in it? You've got it. The Czech-born tennis player Martina
Navrátilová.
Even though her family must have been given the name
Navrátil
a long time ago, it still suits her, given that she retired and then returned to tennis. Or maybe she could have been called
Skála.
Strong as a rock, coming from the word
Skála.
Rock.
Procházka
is the name for people who wandered, and
Novák
and
Novotný
for newcomers. But what about people who stayed in the same place? Let's have a look at surnames related to land ownership and status. While most of us immediately associate the surname
Dvořák
with the Czech composer
Antonín Dvořák,
the surname
Dvořák
is connected to the time of serfdom and referred to a farmer having his own farm. Apparently, it comes from the Czech word for courtyard or farmstead.
Dvůr.
The common name,
Svoboda,
meaning freedom in Czech, referred to a free man as opposed to a serf. The surname,
Sedlák,
was given to peasants having a large piece of land.
Sedláček,
to peasants having a small piece of land. Not all people had a large plot of land. A name for someone who had just a bit of land was
Chalupa
or
Chaloupka,
from the Czech words for cottage,
Chalupa
or little cottage,
Chaloupka. Chalupník
was also used for someone who had a cottage, but the literal translation of this one is maker of a cottage. Do you recognize the ending?
Ník.
It is common in the words like
Dělník.
And one last one before we say goodbye. The Czech word for garden is
Zahrada.
And a gardener, as you might guess, is then a
Zahradník.
So someone who had a garden would be
Zahradník.
We hope you've enjoyed today's program on Czech surnames and their origins. Until next time,
naschledanou,
and take care.
Mějte se.
That was the ABCs of Czech, wrapping up Radio Prague's English podcast for today. Don't forget that this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. You can send your questions and comments to us at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. For me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.